Foodie Films is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me. Hey there, foodie fans, and welcome back to another episode of Foodie Films. Of course, this is your host, your chef de cinema cuisine, Kyle Reinfried. What's going on? What's happening? How are you? What have you been up to? You know, summer's over. Well, is it really over? When does the solstice end or begin? Do seasons even really matter anymore? Wasn't it Benjamin Franklin that first suggested it? Yes, I learned that in National Treasure. Thank you, Nick Cage. Well, actually, thank you, Justin. Oh, he was in The Hangover, Justin Bartha? Something like that. But anyway, this is a fun one. I say, so much. I'm trying to get better, guys. But this is a fun one. I say that for a lot of them, but I mean it. I'm having fun recording these. In this episode, I'm speaking with Jenna Rosen, the marketing and events manager for Time Out Market New York, Brooklyn, Dumbo to be exact. Yes, another member of the Time Out Market family. I met Jenna and had like a half hour, 40 minute conversation with her before recording with Joao. Am I ever going to get that name right? Well, anyway, when I met Joao, like I said, I spoke with Jenna beforehand. I'm having this terrific conversation. I'm going, Kyle, why aren't we recording this? Why don't I just like hand the headset to her and start recording? And we had such a terrific conversation, and we didn't necessarily try to replicate the exact conversation for you here, but it was just another fun conversation. So here I go with Jenna.
Yeah, 2020 is like, I feel like robots and China will be taking over very soon.
They already have. We just don't know it.
Well, did you hear about in China, when you go to a restaurant or you go to a drugstore, now they can actually rate you? Similar to that show Black Mirror.
Oh.
It's like you're being rated when you swipe your credit card. They can rate you from that.
But like what, like rated house, like?
Like rated on like your, I guess, appearance, rated on your, the way that you are as a guest.
What?
Same in restaurants. So if you're rude to a server, then you're going to get like 0 points, something like that. It's crazy. This girl actually at Ample Hill was telling me about it. Because I go to Ample Hill at least 3 times a week, and they just open in Dumbo.
You know, this is opening up a door that something I wanted to speak to you. Look, one of many things I wanted to speak
futuristic
to you about.
Futuristic weird shit.
Well, exactly. Yeah, let's get deep. Let's just say who you are and what you do.
Yeah.
So you're Jenna Rosen, and...
So I'm Jenna Rosen, and what I do... is I'm the head of marketing and events for Time Out Market, New York, specifically. We have 2 floors in Empire Stores, on the ground floor and 5th floor with a rooftop terrace. It's absolutely gorgeous.
It's amazing.
I mean,
what
we have
a view. One of the best views, I'd say, like, in, you know, of the 5 boroughs.
You know, it's funny. So Dumbo House, which is a part of Soho House, they're right above us. So they actually have the best view.
Oh, okay. Well,
we have a similar view, but they cut off some of our view of the Brooklyn Bridge, which I don't love. But we have the Manhattan view, and we also have the waterfront view, which is unbelievable.
Yeah, I live in Jersey City, and I always make the argument when people are just like, yeah, but, you know, if they're, you know, city elitists and Manhattan and everything like that, I'm just like, I've got your view. Like, I'm not saying Manhattan's, you know, like,
No, Jersey City has one of the best views.
Yeah, because it's got the view of the city. It's just like, it's my argument.
That's how I felt about moving to Brooklyn. Like, I felt like Brooklyn is the more elite now because we have this Manhattan gorgeous view. And if you're in Manhattan, you're not really getting the best view.
No, you're not.
I see the Statue of Liberty every day.
Yeah.
It's great.
That's amazing. Yeah. And that's when people come and visit, I had to think about this. I was telling you before we recorded, and obviously the listeners know I was in Europe recently. Mm. And I had been to Paris once before, and I was like, oh, it'd be nice to maybe go to the top of the Eiffel Tower. And I was like, but, you know, if the line's ridiculous, you know, I mean, it was like 20, 25 euro, I'm like, whatever. But the line was like, now actually at the bottom of the Eiffel Tower, you can't go under, you used to be able to walk underneath it. Now it's all, like, gated,
locked
off.
I was there last September, and I noticed that.
Yeah.
And so you just take pictures in front.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they had that one really good, like, lookout point that you can get in the background. But I was like, if it was a short line, but it was a ridiculous line to get in. And then I was like, oh, like, is it worth it? And I went, okay, think of it as like a New York. And well, okay, I live in New Jersey. I'm still a New Yorker in the sense that this is my city.
Yeah.
And I was like, what do I tell people when they come? They want to see the Empire State Building and One World. I always tell them, you know, when people are like, oh, I want to go to the top of the Empire State Building, I'm like, don't do that. Go to the top of 30 Rock, because in my opinion, that's the best view, because then you get to look, I mean, you can look uptown if you want, but you get to look downtown, and you get to see the Empire State Building, the Chrysler, One World.
For sure. That's actually
like,
such
that's,
a good idea.
That's the best. So to go into, again, so from Brooklyn and Queens and Staten Island and Jersey.
Well, all the tourists already know about Staten Island, the free ferry.
Yeah.
Because when I'm going to visit my friends in Staten Island and I'm taking the ferry over, I get bombarded and, like, basically I feel like I'm about to die because all the tourists are about to crumble me. No, but yeah, I mean, there's some ridiculous views outside of Manhattan that people are starting to figure out. I mean, Dumbo just became popular, I don't know, like 5 to 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's interesting. So I live in Dumbo.
Okay.
And I work, obviously, in Dumbo.
Yeah. It's convenient.
It's very convenient. Walking to work every day is beautiful, not having to take
the
subway.
That's the goal. It's
pretty nice.
Yeah.
I was actually, so when I was the marketing manager over at STK,
okay,
which is a steakhouse in Meatpacking and Bryant Park and all over the world, it was funny because I lived in Chelsea and my office was right in Meatpacking and the restaurant was in Meatpacking.
Yeah.
So I've always had such a great commute to work
working
in the food industry. And then in the middle of that, on the weekends, I would work at this little restaurant called Vita, which was only open for like a year.
Yeah.
I thought I was the manager there because no one knew how to do their job.
Uh-huh.
From my perspective, everyone was just like schlepping around and I was the only one really working for tips. And I was the only server because there was, I think, like 15 tables. It was a small little vegan spot. It was actually beautiful, but they didn't know how to run the business properly. And I held a meeting once with the actual manager and the owner and a couple of the busters and the chef. And I was like, guys, we got to get our shit together. People are not coming in as a marketing thing. Like, we're giving them free meals. No one wants it. Like, people just, I don't know what we can do to make this better, but expensive vegan food, it's just not working. It's just not working. And I remember my boyfriend came in to pick me up from work, even though we lived around the corner. And he was like, Jenna, why are you holding a meeting? It was like a very intense meeting. And I was just a server on the weekend.
You're a take charge kind of person from the, I mean, this is only the second time meeting you, but you just seem very efficient and you like to cover all your bases.
For sure.
So, going off of what you're saying before, you're marketing and event manager for Time Out. You also have your own business.
Yeah. So I also have a brand marketing consulting business. It's called Jenna Connects, obviously. Always connecting people. Always connecting the dots. So I have a couple of clients that I do social media work for, experiential marketing, setting up businesses, which is really interesting because I don't just work within the hospitality industry. It's, you know, any type of brand that's looking to, you know, make the next step and become an actual business.
Yeah.
So I help work on all the brand marketing and social and PR, building a business plan out for them.
Yeah.
It's really interesting work. And getting to work with so many different entrepreneurs is awesome, and that's what I love to do. Yeah. And I think I want to have that full time in the future.
That'd be great.
It'd be awesome to have my own business.
You're making good connections via Time Out as well.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, working in the hospitality industry gives you so many different options, you know, if you do want to make the career change, mm-hmm. because you meet so many people within working in restaurants or at a bar or, you know, hosting events. You're always meeting amazing people.
Yeah, and you never know who you're going to meet.
You never know who you're going to meet. You and I met, I mean, quickly because you interviewed my president, the president of Time Out.
Yeah.
And I just happened to be meeting with him in the morning.
Yeah.
So you just never know. You're always making connections. It's New York.
Of course, New York
is the place to do it.
It's the mecca of it all. Yeah.
It's the mecca of connections, aka Jenna Connects. You know, and I've always had a dream of, again, having my own business, consulting for different companies, not just working on one brand, because I feel so passionate about so many different entrepreneurs' ideas.
Yeah.
So right now, one of my clients, he has a Polaroid camera company.
Okay.
So I work with him. It's called ESP Camera. I work with him on helping him book events. So he's doing an American Apparel Festival right now out in LA.
Oh, wow.
And he works with Tao and Jack Daniels and Snapchat and Instagram and very cool brands. So I help him to do some biz dev, some social media and stuff like that.
Cool.
But, you know, like, you never know who you're going to meet through those types of small opportunities,
too. Yeah, you're working with a lot of people that then work with a lot of people. It's a giant ripple effect.
And it's so funny. It all comes down to hospitality. And events. So that's why I love doing what I do now full time.
Yeah.
And then having my little, you know, sprinkles of clients on the side. It's really fun, and it's fun to meet all different types of talent.
Let me ask you, in your personal life, do you like hosting? Do you like throwing parties?
Yeah, or? So my boyfriend and I actually moved to Dumbo to start hosting people in our apartment, because my apartment in Chelsea was a shoebox. It was my little nook, and I loved it, and I miss it. But now we live in a beautiful lofted apartment.
Awesome.
You know, I'm not paying as much as I would be paying in Manhattan.
Sure.
And Dumbo's such a quaint, beautiful, you know, upcoming area, so there's also a very strong local community here.
Mm-hmm.
So you go to the gym, you know everyone.
Yeah.
You go to the supermarket, you know everyone.
Yeah.
You know, you're walking down the street, you know everyone's dog. Maybe I just do. I don't know, because I'm creepy and I pet everyone's dogs because I can't have my own right now. But this neighborhood is so built, it's becoming so built up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Time Out Market's there to help as well.
Yeah. That's
and we're
crazy.
Bringing in so many people from around the world and, you know, around all, you know, the tri-state area.
Yeah.
So it's amazing how many people... You know, it's amazing to be the face of something in Dumbo at, you know, representing Time Out in, you know, the Dumbo bib meetings,
mm-hmm.
or just at the gym or representing on a t-shirt and I'm walking into somewhere and they're like, oh, you work for Time Out Market? I'm like, yeah. What do you want to know about it?
Do you think that people, residents of Dumbo, was it like a collective excitement that get it? No,
it actually... So being a resident here, I mean, I've only been here for about a year, but I've met a lot of old school Dumbo peeps.
Sure. Well, I mean, that's always going to happen.
Yeah.
When you have your older residents.
For sure. And then all the local businesses here were really, really kind of scared that we were going to be taking a lot of business away from them. You know, I don't. I still go to local businesses and I support,
mm-hmm.
You know, I go to the bars, I go to Almondine, which is next door, and I get the lunch special there with my Dumbo big card. I get $2 off. And I'm still, you know, I still think that the locals aren't really understanding what we are yet, since we're such a new concept.
Yeah.
And we're such a big company. It's very corporate.
Yeah.
So it's hard for locals and people in the area to kind of, I guess, connect to our brand, because we kind of overtook the area.
Uh-huh.
But I think in time they'll learn to love it, or not learn to love it, but just come in and actually enjoy.
Yeah,
because we're offering so many more food options in the area.
Sure,
there's really not many. So for lunch and breakfast, lunch, dinner, just grab a drink with a friend. It's an easy place to go.
Yeah.
You know, our bars are very affordable. We have $13 to $14 cocktails. I mean, can't get better than that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, our food choices are a bit expensive, but you're getting restaurant quality food.
Yeah, and also, I mean, it's a place that you can go and you can just have, like, small bites, too.
Yeah.
It's, you know, after, you know, doing an episode with Joao, it was very, you know, I did a lot of research on Time Out and then looking into, like, how it started in Lisbon. And, you know, you can't, like, obviously every city, every neighborhood that gets a Time Out, it's going to be a different kind of experience as far as for the residents and as far as just, I mean, or for the customers.
Right.
But what the initial goal was to create a place that you get, you know, taste of the city all in one location.
Exactly.
And so that's just a different creature than your mom and pop, like, restaurant.
Right.
And also, in the end, like, in Lisbon, that's now their number one tourist attraction.
Which is incredible.
Which is incredible.
Yeah.
Now, is it going to become New York's number one tourist attraction? No. Is it going to become Brooklyn's number one tourist attraction?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Dumbo's? Like, definitely.
Yeah.
So if people didn't know Dumbo's name yet, which I recently taught one of my previous guests is down underneath Manhattan Bridge of the Pass.
Yeah.
So it's not, there's not a love for elephants in this neighborhood. I'm not saying they hate elephants, but, you know.
Well,
it's
actually, the Dumbo Drop, which is in a month from now, they do these, it's for charity, but they have a ton of different food vendors and retail vendors, and everyone does, like, $5 bites, and thousands of residents from all over Manhattan, Queens, Brooklyn, Bronx, Staten Island, they come in. I think there's, like, 7,000 to 10,000 people that come to Dumbo.
Oh, wow.
And they drop these little elephants.
Oh, okay.
So little gifts <you. laughs> inside of the elephants. So, this neighborhood actually does love Dumbo.
Yes.
I think they did some sort of a partnership with them when Dumbo the movie came out.
Oh, really?
Too. Yeah, so it's like a little play on words, and it's fun.
Of course, yeah.
But I think that, you know, again, this neighborhood is so up and coming, and it's pretty much there.
Yeah, I think it's kind of past the up and coming point. I mean, it's definitely like,
I mean, but it's still.
Oh, there's still
So much more movement, and you know,
Time Out just opened up in end of May,
right?
So I mean, there's still more to come,
right?
But I think it's established itself as like what kind of new neighborhood that it is. I remember being here. I worked on a show called Work of Art for Bravo, and that was in 2010, 2011, and just even like seeing the change then. I mean, this is an area. Famously, in the movie Scent of a Woman, they come here at one point. I think it's a Ferrari that Pacino and Chris O'Donnell are like driving. You know, Pacino's blind in the movie and he just wants to drive. Again, there's a Ferrari, Lamborghini, something like that. And he's driving it on like the streets, like, you know, a few blocks away from where we are right now. On the cobblestone. And you just see what it looked like in 1990.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, like, you know, like, it wasn't, it does confuse me, and that's, I wish I had more money than I did, because I would invest in, like, places that have waterfront property that aren't, like, hip places to live yet, yeah, exactly, but it's just, like, but still, it amazes me that no one went, like, this'll be worth something someday, like, again, the view of New York right here, the view of these bridges.
Oh, so there's a ton of residents going back to the locals.
Mm-hmm.
Who I have come across and I've met who have bought properties like 30 years ago here.
Yeah.
Above the restaurant Superfine, over on, I think it's on Front Street, there's this girl who I met who is actually an author of a new book that just came out. She lives in a property that I think her husband bought maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Before this neighborhood really became what it is now. But I've met other people who have bought properties like 30 to 40 years ago here in that same building. And I mean, the apartments are like 2,000 to 3,000 square feet and they're paying nothing. It's comparatively to, you know, other places in the city and in Brooklyn, but it's incredible to see how many people were, you know, they knew it.
Yeah,
they were psychic in that they knew that this place would be something one day. Yeah. you know, and talking to so many old school peeps that have been, you know, living in Brooklyn for so long, including my parents who are originally from Canarsie.
Okay.
They would think of Dumbo when they were younger as, you know, a really bad place to go.
Yeah.
You just did not go to this area. You did not go under the bridge.
No,
it was not a
shady.
Safe place
Those
to be.
Are, yeah, exactly.
The train tracks, people were selling drugs, prostitution, the whole nine. And people really avoided this area up until, you know, up until then. But also, going back really quickly, when 9/11 happened, or before 9/11, when the towers were still there, there are so many beautiful photos of in front of Empire Stores, actually, before Empire Stores became Empire Stores. There was just weeds and plants everywhere, like over the railroad tracks. And you saw the towers and you saw them like looking over, you know, the Brooklyn Bridge, and it was so beautiful. There's so many images of that, and it's actually, they have them in the Brooklyn Historical Society in the same building. And I mean, that the Brooklyn Historical Society really shows how much this place has changed. It's incredible. And that goes back to, you know, all the people who I've met from Brooklyn who have said that this was always a magical place, and it just needed some work.
Yeah, it just needed a little, like, facelift.
Yeah. I mean, as lot of New York needed a facelift.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, the city was bankrupt, you know, like, and going into, it was almost like a war zone in the you know, early to mid, even late 70s, and it took a while to clean up, and it was neighborhood by neighborhood. And now, I mean, you know, like, I mean, I do get the concern of residents and people that have been here a while, but I think they just need to, I mean, you just ultimately have to go with the flow and
accept
just,
the change.
Yeah, accept the change. I mean, there's always going to be change. I mean, it was, there's people that I'm sure absolutely loved it here, but then when it started going downhill, like, they moved.
Right.
Like, you know, that's just, that was change that happened. That was change definitely for the worse at that time. And then, like, you know, I mean, this is all change for the better, but I mean, does it fall into gentrification? You know, like, I don't know. Like, it's, I mean, there's also gentrification always a bad thing. No, it's not. But ultimately, I think you have to look at least from Time Out's perspective, or not Time Out's perspective, but looking at, you know, at Time Out, again, it's a place that's trying to give you, like, a one-stop place for, you know, all the different, you know, food you can get in this city.
Yeah.
And give you the inspiration to then explore elsewhere. And like you said, then you can go into that was the Brooklyn Historical
Society. Yeah, the Brooklyn Historical. Yeah, exactly.
Because of that, then you can find out about that. And you
right.
can, and you can learn more and you can appreciate more. So I think it's all mostly for, you know, for the better.
Yeah, and I mean, Time Out Market's not just about food and drink. We have a cultural component as well. You know, we have local musicians that are coming in on the weekends, Friday through Sunday. We really use our stage on the fifth floor as a platform for local artists and local musicians to, and even, you know, the local trivia league, they're, you know, they're coming every other Wednesday to do New York trivia in our space, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And I think the tourists really appreciate it because I don't know if they've ever seen anything like that, you know. And, you know, the musicians are also very appreciative because there's so many struggling artists in New York that are so amazing but can't get in front of the right person or the right people.
Yeah.
And we use our stage as a platform for those local people to come in and do their thing. And I think that that's really magical that we're working with the community and we're working with, you know, local New Yorkers to make those things happen. And you know, and we always provide them with some food and some drink and let them enjoy the space as well. But yeah, we really try to tie in the programming into Time Out Market. Mm-hmm. We have paint and sip classes on the terrace. You know, we're looking to do some cool Halloween stuff and, you know, make it homey and make it local so that we don't just look like a huge corporate setting for food and drink.
Yeah.
And, you know, that goes into the dinner series that I was telling you about called called Off the Menu.
Off the Menu,
That
sounds real. I got to tell you, that sounds like I was, you know, setting up the computer and getting everything. I'm just like, that sounds really cool. I want to talk about that. So let's talk about Off the Menu.
Yeah. So I came up with the concept Off the Menu.
So yeah, your brainchild.
Oh yeah, always. So Off the Menu is going to be a curated dinner series from working with Ivy Stark to Pat LaFreda to Jacob's Pickles to all of our vendors, hopefully.
Yeah.
whoever really wants to be a part of it. And we're going to be doing different menu items from their other restaurants or things that they're making up kind of on the flow.
Yeah, things that just aren't available. Because it's, I mean, they're obviously great menu items, but they're limited to the amount of what they can have at the marketplace.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, at the market, they really only have like 8 things on their menu plus some specials on their little menus on the counter. So we're giving them the opportunity to do these curated dinners for up to, you know, 25 to 30 people, selling tickets for it, pairing these dinners with like a tequila partner or a whiskey partner or a wine partner. And really making it a special curated and exclusive event for locals and tourists and whoever really is interested in food and fun and, you know, learning about the chefs. We have so many great chefs and we have such a good platform, obviously being one of the biggest media companies, Time Out, and we want to be able to showcase how amazing these chefs really are. And I think Ivy Stark's actually going to be our first off the menu chef, which we're really looking forward to. Ivy Stark, she was running the culinary at Dos Caminos and Rosa Mexicana. She is incredible. We're really lucky to have her. She has 2 restaurants in the market, Ivy Stark upstairs on the 5th floor, and then her vegan concept, which is really cool. It's called Brooklyn Wild.
Oh, I'll have to try that.
So she's just working right now on for the off the menu, just on the Mexican concept. So she's going to be demoing all of the food on the counter in front of, you know, our guests.
Yeah.
And then she'll bring all the food out at once. We'll pair it with a tequila company.
Awesome.
One that she's worked with before and one that she's very comfortable with. And we'll have a brand ambassador come in from the tequila company and they'll be talking about why each tequila is paired with.
That's perfect. That's one of my favorite things is going. I love pairing and I love hearing, you know, someone explain like, you know, take a bite of this, then take a sip of this, or just even take a small sip, let it, you know, swish around
in your mouth, and then take a bite of that steak taco.
So
you know, I'd like to incorporate maybe something on the stage at that time, so people are also occupied after, you know, the tasting, and maybe we do a tarot card reading after, or maybe we have a musician there, and really make it special for our guests so that they want to come to the next one. That's off the menu, and I think, you know, so September will be Ivy Stark, we'll be doing 2 of those dinners, and then following hopefully Jacob's Pickles, and then Pat LaFreda doing a steak dinner with a whiskey pairing, and yeah, we'll have a lot of those going on, so check out timeoutmarketnewyork.com to see all of our events going on in the space.
So you say all of that, and I, as a videographer, as a producer, I just start automatically seeing, like, a series, do you have, I mean, as far as your goals, do you see anything, like, I mean, obviously you're very involved in a live event. That is your livelihood. Mm-hmm. It's all about like the here and now. Do you want to get into the realm? I mean, I've got a podcast on the side. I do, you know, for my main source of income, I do, you know, video projects. Is that something that you're interested in? Do you want video content, or are you very much like, you know, like as far as food, are you about the here and now, the live event aspect of it?
I mean, I think video content and photography is so important for the first couple.
Sure.
To, you know, make that appearance known on our social channels. And luckily we have, and, you know, Time Out has a photographer.
Yeah, of course.
An in-house photographer and in-house videographer to do certain things like that. But I think for the first couple we'll have some type of video going, just to grab that content, because we do want to make this into a series. And eventually I'm giving everyone a hint right now, but eventually my Time Out editors from Time Out magazine really want to do a podcast on our stage.
Perfect.
And they wanted to make it live.
We'll
incorporate the off the menu into that podcast.
Nice.
And really make it known and make it live.
Very cool.
So, and we'll be doing, you know, curated things like this in the future.
Mm-hmm.
I just really want to start small to see where we're comfortable.
Sure.
And what works and what doesn't work and what our guests like and what they don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to tend to the chefs and I want to tend to the guests.
Yeah.
And that's really my job right now, is both tending to the chefs, making sure they're happy, marketing things that they want me to market and put on social media and send to the press, as well as marketing to our guests and seeing what makes the guests happy. And I've been seeing a lot of people interested in doing the paint and sip classes on our terrace. And that brings in some business too, right? Like, I work with a company in Park Slope called Private Picasso. And again, everything's very local. So, you know, we have like 15 to 20 seats on our terrace that we reserve. And it's a 2-hour class watching the sun go down from our terrace. It's absolutely gorgeous. And we have an instructor doing the paint classes. And we offer complimentary glasses of wine for everyone who comes. And we really, truly turn it into a nice experience for people. And then they, you know, happen to dine with us after, which makes me and the chefs happy. So I'm really trying to just make everyone happy and see how everyone's goals are aligned. And yeah, that's, I mean, that's the job, right? And that's what I'm passionate about. It's not just a job for me too. It's more of a passion project at the end of the day. So
Yeah. I have goodwill in people, so I'll say my idea right now, hoping that no one will steal it. I mean, it's not an original idea. It's just obviously, you know, there's obviously original inventions, and then you're just perfecting things. I had an idea for a company, and it would be called Crafts and Brews, and it was to draw in more the male crowd into kind of like the wine and the, and the painting.
Like that.
So it's not, so it wouldn't just be painting. It would be a place that would be multiple, like, types of crafts that you can either, like, make, like, t-shirts or, like, you know, like you know, DIY kind of like stuff.
Well, I feel like that it's so funny that you're saying this, because I actually, and going back to me hosting people in my Dumbo loft apartment, because I'm so fancy, I hosted a tie-dye class on my rooftop a couple of weeks ago.
There you go.
I had, like, one guy there. My boyfriend didn't want to come because, again, like you're saying, a lot of men don't want to be crafting. I don't know if that's kosher to say in 2019, but hey.
I'm fine with it.
It's okay.
You're in a safe place.
I'm in a safe place.
You're in your office. And the podcast.
I'm in a WeWork, the most safe place you can be. There's security downstairs.
There is.
So, so I hosted a tie-dye event on the roof. I put it on social media, and I actually did get a lot of my guy friends super interested. They were like, "Oh my god, I want to make tie-dye t-shirts.
Yeah.
That's so dope."
Yeah.
Like, I want to turn my Rolling Stone white t-shirt into tie-dye. He's like, they're like,
"Yeah, it's a bit different than doing just like a Bob Ross kind of, you know, like."
Yeah, I think it's super fun, and I think that you're onto something. Oh my god.
Maybe
you should host it at a timeout market.
Ooh, that'd be good.
Hey, let me know.
Yeah.
I'm up to doing anything.
I would love to. That's I mean,
brewskis and painting. As the brews say.
Yeah, exactly. And that would even be, I mean, that would be something good. I mean, the Polaroid aspect too. I mean, there's just so much you can do with your, you know, mentioning that company. And you guys had the Polaroid at
We had them at our opening party. Again, ESP camera, super dope. They do branded Polaroids.
That's really
we bring them in. Everyone drops their phone into a pile. Right? Like, we don't want any phones when we're painting and we're sipping. And unless you're trying to, like, tag timeout market, I'm fine with it on social media. But other than that, I really want those types of, you know, group experiences to be intimate. And you're meeting people, you're enjoying the space, you're enjoying what you're doing, you're crafting, your mind is off of work, you know, you're in a stress-free environment. More stressful for me, not for the guests, because I'm the one putting on the event. But for the guests, it's stress-free. And I think that having ESP there or for any type of event is super cool, because they're the ones taking photos for you and actually giving them to you live, similar to old school days when you didn't have a phone to snap everything.
Polaroid is back with a vengeance.
For sure. I think that it goes full circle in hospitality and events. So yeah, pretty cool.
Well, I mean, it was a long ago in our conversation, you were saying the whole, what they're doing in China.
Oh my God.
That, as far as, what exactly was it again? It was like,
rating
individuals.
Like Black Mirror.
So it's the opposite of like what you do on Yelp. It's now Yelp for individuals.
It's like Yelp, live Yelp. It's scary.
This is something I heard a rumor. I don't know how exactly they would do it because a lot of people use Instagram for this reason. I heard Instagram might stop showing likes.
Can't wait.
Can't wait.
Can't freaking wait.
Okay, so you are a brand marketing consultant. Why can you not wait? I know people that work in PR and they said that's stupid.
Oh, they're crying about it.
Yeah.
People are literally, I mean, did you read the New York Post article?
No, I did not.
So, you know how everyone's like, oh my God, Kylie Jenner, well, Forbes named Kylie Jenner.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. You know, I heard it. I didn't read it. I heard
the
about
first,
that. Yeah.
Like, young billionaire of our time. Cool. Good for you, girl. And it's mostly because of Instagram. Instagram turned people into personally monsters. What I think monsters.
Yeah.
If you don't have a big enough following, you can't get into this party. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a big enough following, you can't have the same clothes as this person.
Yeah.
It is so superficial, the app. Yeah. It is the most superficial thing I've ever seen in my life, and it's not live, and you can't touch it. It's not physical.
But from a marketing standpoint and for businesses, what do you think about that? Because businesses want to see when they're...
The metrics, I know.
They want to see metrics, and obviously, I've had quite a few, like, Instagram, you know, like, influencers, you know, as guests... And,
well,
you know, that's what they...
their livelihood.
Yeah, this is their livelihood. So, obviously, so then businesses want to see, oh, you have that many followers, that'll be good for me, because then you'll share. So, I guess as far as followers, that's fine, but I guess maybe likes?
I think followers is so much more different than likes.
Okay.
I think that the whole like concept is...
It's very vapid. It's very shallow.
It's very vapid, but it's also for yourself. In the New York Post article, they were... talking to, I guess, someone in the medical field about your brainwaves and how they work and, you know, what makes you happy and, you know, what makes you sad and likes when you get, as an influencer, 10,000 likes if you have a certain number of followers.
Yeah.
That makes you very happy if you get, you know, and then you promote it and you spend money to get those likes and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
And if you get, you know, 1,000 and not 10,000, your brainwaves start to go down and you start to get depressed and you're a little bit unhappy. And I think it's just, again, going back to that superficial argument, I think, you know, from a marketing perspective, I think followers make sense when businesses are paying influencers to post, but likes doesn't really matter at the end of the day. It matters what content you're posting and if it's good or not. If your photography skills are awesome, people are going to look and they're going to love it. If people are posting Time Out Market and I see it on my feed and I reach out to them to use one of their pictures, and, you know, we're building their content up and getting them followers, that's really cool for them.
Yeah.
You know, like that's cool. That's great. And a lot of businesses do that as well without having that money exchange. You know, for those really big influencers who get $1 million per post, I mean, from a marketing perspective, I think they're wasting a large chunk of change.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, for some businesses, it really does help. But again, taking away the likes doesn't really interfere with who you are as an influencer.
Yeah, it's still going to be out there. And from the business's standpoint, they'll see that they have that many followers or whatever. I'm all for it, I think. I mean, especially from
I think it'll help people. I think it'll help get people off of their phones a little bit. I mean, see the notifications that this person liked. I mean, hey, look, I'm the first one to post on Instagram and see all of my likes and be like, oh my God, I got 400 today. Cool, great picture.
Yeah.
But it's not my life. It's not something that, you know, is building my confidence level.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something that's it's an added bonus. It's fun and it's a little hobby, but people really do make this their lives and they're on their phones and they're not connecting with people as much.
Yeah.
So I think I think what Instagram's doing is great. All the influencer friends that I have might kill me for saying that, but it doesn't really affect their followers, so.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, if you've got good content, people will then be like, take the one extra step to then click on their profile and click follow.
Right.
Like, they're like, wow, that's great. And then they should be like, I wonder what else they got.
And you could still see from the back end how many people are actually liking your photo. So it doesn't take it away fully.
So do you think then people are going to start, is it going to become a cultural thing to then post pictures of, like, the likes.
Oh my god! I honestly, I hope not. That is just that would be
that
too
would be
much.
The saddest thing ever.
That would be really sad. So yeah. I think it's a good thing. I think it'll make some positive change. I know this is a terrible thing to say, but I wish Instagram would just go away. I mean, it's great for businesses, but I miss the organic times that we had.
Yeah. I mean, I'm out of all social media. I think I do like Instagram the most just because I'm a visual person. I like seeing.
Me too. And I do like.
And I like people tagging like the rest. I see a good picture. I'm like, oh, where was that? And then I can go check out that restaurant.
Yeah. But again, that's why so many publishing companies aren't doing well and magazines aren't doing well anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like Time Out is basically Instagram, but in a magazine.
Yeah.
You're seeing, you know, what food is available to you in the city, what new restaurants are, you know, and so I think that was a tool that used to be used almost as Instagram, those magazines. And people are reading less and retaining less information and gaining a little bit more not knowledge, but a little bit more information from Instagram.
Well, it falls into the instant gratification.
Exactly.
It is ironic, or it is just matter of fact that it's Insta and it's instant gratification. I mean, it's just all about the getting it right now and then posting it out there. Instagram originally was just for photographers as a platform to share their pictures, and I think that they're trying to get back to that. I don't think it'll ever become as pure as what it originally was, because I mean, in the beginning it was for like photos. It wasn't because we weren't living yet in like a true like selfie culture and all of that.
But the thing is, I don't mind all the photos, right? Like people want to create memories, and I love that. I went home this past weekend to my parents' house in New Jersey, and we were watching home videos and looking at old photos, and
no one has photo albums anymore.
I know, and that's good and bad because it's less clutter, but
that should be a DIY. That's like you come and then you print out pictures that you want, you can make a little photo albums.
I love that.
Right?
Maybe you should take my job. Maybe you should go into event marketing.
Let's just team up. I love throwing. I love hosting. I love throwing parties. So
yeah.
It's always been a field that I've been very interested in.
Okay. Let's partner.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
I'm down.
So like I guess I've always just tackled it again from since I'm a visual person. I'm just like as I said before, you're talking about off the menu. I'm like, I see a show. Like I see this thing that, you know, just because we have so many of those Netflix and Amazon and all those food shows. I'm just like, I just see something.
Are you really big into food shows, like on the Food Network and on Netflix and Anthony Bourdain and all that?
Bourdain, obviously being a Jersey boy that he is, is always like fascinating me. And I was lucky I got to meet him when I worked on a season of Top Chef as a PA.
Oh my God, cool.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool. And just from there, Parts Unknown. And then now with Netflix, everyone listening knows this from preview episodes, but like Somebody Feed Phil, Ugly Delicious, like those are not really the competition shows. I mean, I'm a human, so I watched, you know, I'm forgetting it right now.
Cupcake Wars?
No, the British Bake Off.
Okay. Yeah. Never heard of it.
Never heard of it?
Nope, never seen it.
The Great British Bake Off?
It's funny, I'm a big foodie, and I'm a crazy person about movies, film, and TV, but for some reason, I just don't put the two together when it comes to shows.
Oh, okay.
I've never been a fan of gaming shows. The only like show like that that I liked was American Idol, and I was like 12 years old.
For me, the competition shows I never liked, and then except for some cooking ones, because you actually saw like, oh, these people are talented, and so that American Idol does fall into that. These people, I mean, once they get accepted and they go to Hollywood, it is about talented people. But I mean, with the cooking, it was just like, all right, these people are talented and they're trying to win $50,000, $100,000 to help them further and the recognition to help them further their dream and their career, versus something like Survivor, An Amazing Race. And while that money will change, Shark Tank. And while that money will change their lives, it's not because of a talent.
Right.
And cooking, that's really a big time. And working on Top Chef, like, I also then started appreciating, like, you know, just the aspect of plating and seeing them all work and seeing, I mean, because it is such a, you know, cooking is all about time. And then on top of that, you're adding the competitive, you know, you got to do this dish in a half hour or an hour you have to complete it. And so it's just really interesting to see what they were all doing.
But, yeah.
But now I'm much more about the docu-series kind
of
stuff.
What was the documentary that, I mean, I watched it maybe like a year or two ago. Nancy Silverton was in it. And a couple of other folks that were big time chefs. And they, it was on, I think it was on Netflix. And I was actually obsessed with that.
I mean, was it part of Chef's Table or was it?
Maybe. And Ivan was in it from Ivan Ramen. And who else was in it? Oh, the girl from Milk Bar. It was amazing. That actually made me cry.
Okay.
The Milk Bar episode made me cry.
Yeah.
For some reason. I'm very sensitive, I guess. But that made me cry because she had such a passion for doing what she did in her house and really didn't want fame or anything from it.
Yeah, she just wanted to create.
She just wanted to create for, you know, her restaurant, like the restaurant she was working at because she was the pastry chef. And and then she got discovered and she really didn't like the fame and the fortune and all that stuff. And she was really humble about it. And I love people like that. I think that some other chefs are not as humble. A lot are very cocky, which well-deserved. They've done amazing things and they've made so many people happy with what they're consuming. So I totally get the cockiness. I would be the same way for sure if I was a chef. Whenever I make Jason, my boyfriend, whenever I make him dinner, I'm like, how was it? Did you like it? Tell me right now. And I don't know if he's scared of me or not. Like,
maybe he should rate you then.
Maybe he should. Maybe he has a little machine in like the bat and like our bedroom where he's like rating me. But he's like, yeah, babe, it's great. But who knows? I mean, if he's really telling me it's great, in my head, I'm like, oh my God, I'm an amazing chef. Like, thank you so much. And every time I make food for my friends, I'm like, you like it, right?
Yeah.
Like, it was amazing, right?
So
I'd probably be a cocky chef.
What were you, like, eating growing up? Or do you like, did you like cooking right away? Who was cooking in your family?
Okay, so this is funny.
Okay.
I just said before that I was at my parents' house in New Jersey this week, and we were with my family friends who I've grown up with. I mean, I was a baby with their kids and yada, yada, yada. So we were talking about what we were eating back in the day together as a group.
Oh.
And I was talking about their snack cabinet, because ultimately, when you're young, the snack cabinet is your favorite place in the world.
Yeah, I mean, we grew up when we grew up, I mean, I'm older than you, but still, it was the time of just, like, great snacks.
So many good. Yeah. I mean, come on, like, Gushers, Go-Gurts, which was, like, the healthier one.
Yeah.
Dunkaroos.
Fruit by the Foot.
I mean, Yodels.
Yeah.
And, like, no, my boyfriend's nephew eats avocado as a snack and grapes as a snack. Pizza's, I mean, the most unhealthy thing that he eats. So, Matt, I can't believe my lifespan would probably be much higher, you know, if I was eating like that when I was younger.
Yeah.
And parents don't let their kids touch those types, you know, Gushers and that kind of crap today. But Doritos were my favorite.
Oh,
Cheetos,
yeah.
Little Crunchy Guys, those were bomb. But anyway, so I was talking to my family friends about their snack cabinet back in the day, and I would run to their house because my parents didn't really keep food like that in our house. And I would just snack every hour. I would grab a new bag of chips or Gushers or whatever it was, ice pops, you know, the Fruity Pebble or the Flintstone ice pops where you push it up.
Oh, the push pop. Yeah.
Yeah, those were so bomb. So funny enough, we were talking about that yesterday, and he was like, my family friend was like, I would never feed my kids that ever. I mean, we were drinking soda like every night.
Oh,
our parents didn't realize that it was so unhealthy.
I went to a day camp growing up that it was a short one. It was like kind of give like parents a break in the morning. It was like from 9 to noon. It was just like a 3-hour thing. And in the middle, so what would that be? 10:30, we had like a drink break, and it was soda. It was like the America's Choice.
You didn't have Capri Sun or the Kool-Aid things where you twist off the top?
They gave us soda.
Wow.
Yeah, and like it was, you ran to this. It was this hut. It was at like the sporting field in like my town. So it was like the hut where they would sell like, you know, concessions and stuff. But at that time in the morning, they just had all this like soda ready, and it was like warm soda.
But
you ran up because everyone wanted like root beer or like cream soda, and then like I think like after that was like orange was the most popular.
I actually love orange soda.
Yeah.
Remember Kenan and Kyle?
Oh yeah.
Orange soda, that was awesome. Yeah, love that. Never forget. Yeah, I mean, growing up, going back to the question, growing up, my mom cooked so much more than my dad, for sure. And my mom was actually like working later than my dad. My dad worked for himself in real estate, and he would be home by like 5 o'clock still working, and my mom would come home from teaching and she'd be complaining about her principal and like exhausted, but she'd be cooking me whatever I wanted. The main things was pepper steak, which was always good.
Yeah.
Chinese chicken salad, classic.
Yeah.
And then I would cry if I didn't get mozzarella sticks as an appetizer. Pizza bagels, for sure. I would come home from track from high school, and me and my friends would like raid our cabinets and make the TGI Fridays, like frozen mozzarella sticks and the pizza bagels. Those were my all-time favorite. And then bagels. I mean, it was a really carb-heavy childhood.
Yeah.
You know? And then tons of candy. So in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, there was candy in the school. And I would like steal a dollar from my dad's wallet literally every day and throw out my sandwich and my fruit that my mom would pack me. I was such a bad kid. And I would eat a Twix bar every day. And my parents wondered why I had so many cavities growing up. And I'd be like, I don't know either. I mean, maybe it's the saliva in my mouth. Who knows? And it ended up that I would just throw out my parents' lunch. I was so bad. And then just eat Twix bars all the time and called it a day. And I was I thought I was healthy. I was happy. So it didn't really matter. And now I'm, you know, now I try to be as healthy as possible. It's hard with the market because I eat for free.
Oh,
so
wow.
People just throw like fried chicken and like rice in my face all day. And then I try to eat a salad and I'm like, nah. But when I'm not at the market, I'm trying to always eat a salad and keep it light and have some yogurt. And
yeah, when did you start, like, did you help, like, your mom cook? Or when did you start kind of cooking for yourself?
I started cooking in college.
As most of us do.
Yeah, my roommate's actually, my old roommate in college was an amazing chef. We went to Penn State.
Cool.
Crazy party school.
Yes.
Lots of drinking, lots of fun, lots of shitty food, fat bitch sandwiches.
Fat bitch sandwiches. Yeah. What are those?
I think, okay, so if my memory serves me correct, because it's been a few years, chicken tenders, mozzarella cheese, Russian dressing.
Okay.
And what else was on there?
So it's like the same, like at Rutgers, they had grease trucks.
Yeah, similar. Yeah. Exactly. So we would eat those all the time, and I didn't gain a pound. And now if I ate those all the time, it wouldn't be a good situation.
We used to be so, like, you know, like, the life was just so ahead of us.
Oh my God, I know, right?
We were invincible.
Invincible. Yeah. Anything I did, I woke up the next morning, and I was, like, ready to go with so much energy.
Yeah.
And, I think it just caught up to me, as it did for everyone else.
For everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah, now I have to go to the gym 4 times a week instead of once a week just for fun to like meet boys at the gym in college. So now it's actually going to the gym and trying to break out a sweat and, you know, do all that. But so I started cooking in college with my roommate. She would make this amazing chicken with mushroom cream sauce and some garlic and dill on top, which is actually an interesting combo if you think about it, but it was really, really good. And my other roommate would make bomb lasagna.
Ooh.
So we just had some great cooks, and I had to follow behind them as the sous chef. And then when I moved into the city and I really had to fend for myself, and I was making like $38,000 my first job, so I couldn't eat out, I really had to cook for myself. So I would start making really good different types of salads and chicken and salmon and, you know, kept it like American healthy with like chicken, potatoes, veggies, and then like ice cream for dessert always. But now I'm pretty. I have my Taco Tuesdays with my boyfriend.
Nice.
We make some really good salmon with some great sides. Lots of couscous in my life. I actually, right after college, I was in Israel. I was living in Israel for like 6 months.
What was that like?
Oh, amazing! The food is ridiculous. So
where in Israel?
So I was living in Jerusalem.
Okay.
I was working at a tech startup, and then I moved to Tel Aviv for a couple of months.
Cool. What did you like more, Jerusalem or Tel Aviv? Two very different cities.
They're just two different. Yeah. It's almost like being in two different countries.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, Jerusalem, you have the city.
Like Old Testament versus New Testament.
Yeah, literally. Jerusalem is, and it's different food too.
Okay.
And you have the Shuk, which is the market in Jerusalem, and then you have the Caramel Market in Tel Aviv.
Okay.
And, you know, the markets are just so vibrant, colorful, so much energy, so much culture, fresh foods, fresh candy, fresh everything.
Ooh, yes.
And we would take all of that back to our apartment and just cook up something.
Awesome.
And whatever it was with fresh ingredients, so it was always
so
good.
So just, yeah, tasted, yeah.
But living there was a dream. I wish to go back to actually live there in the future. Hopefully, maybe one day. I've been going back every year since, so can't get enough of it. And whenever I hear new Israeli chefs coming into New York, I get so excited. And, you know, in going back to Time Out Market, we have Nur, which is one of the best chefs from Israel. And he, you know, his restaurant's in Flatiron, unbelievable food. And then we have Miss Ada, Little Ada, who's doing a hummus bar. And his restaurant's in Fort Greene. If you've never been there, it's incredible.
I need to go.
You have to go. And what else do we have that's Israeli? Well, we have a Israeli owner of Bread's Bakery. So we have Bread's Bagelry and Bread's Bakery. We have this insane chocolate babka. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Have you tasted it?
Yeah, that was one of the,
You're going to have to go to the market with me after this for lunch.
All right.
You're invited. We're cool. You're going to try all of the Israeli spots in the market. That's what we're going to do for our food tour.
I mean, just like, it sounds like you said, it's not just a job. It's just,
it's a passion.
It's a passion.
It really is.
So it's pretty cool that you get to work, obviously, with your passion, with these other people that are incredibly passionate. I mean, Time Out Marketplace started because of Joao having this passion and wanting to create a 4D experience from the magazine.
It's a good way to put it, a 4D experience. I like that. I'm going to start saying that. Coin that term now while you can.
There we go. Yeah. We, talk a little about movies on these special episodes. So I asked you what were some of your favorite movies, and you gave me a couple of choices, and I think it would be fun to talk about. It was just, they're two so innocent, like children movies from our youth, and that's Matilda and Dunstan Checks In. So let's talk about, I think everyone that's seen Matilda knows probably what scene we're going to talk about, but Bruce, I love the one because I want to see if there's clips on YouTube to play for you guys. So it said Bruce versus chocolate cake scene.
Oh, the best. So
this is the Bruce versus chocolate cake scene.
Smells chocolatey, eh? Now, eat it.
I don't want any, thank you.
Eat it!
Don't eat it.
She wouldn't give him cake.
It's poison.
Something's up.
You look like you enjoyed that, Brucey.
Mm-hmm.
You must have some more.
No, thanks.
But you'll hurt Cook's feelings.
Huh?
Cookie! She made this cake just for you to have on your very own. Her sweat and blood went into this cake, and you will not leave this platform until you have consumed the entire confection! Entire confection! See you at lunch. Thank you, Cookie.
Rotten kids.
You wanted cake, you got cake. Now eat it!
What?
Bruce!
Yeah, you can do it! Go, Bruce! 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 Yeah!
What's her name? What's the evil principal? Oh God, I should.
Trunchbull.
Yes.
So Miss Trunchbull.
Yes.
Or Mrs. I forget if she's married or not.
I think Ms. Right.
I think she was married. Anyway, yeah. So Miss Trunchbull forcefully makes Bruce in front of the whole classroom. Actually, in front of the whole school.
The gymnasium auditorium.
In the auditorium. Shoved the piece of... Actually, the whole cake.
Poor Bruce.
I know.
She gives him the slice. And then says, you know, and was that creepy lunch lady. Yeah.
Oh my God, the creepy lunch lady.
I forgot about her.
She's
licking her hand. And it's like made with her blood and
sweat. And tears.
Oh
God, that haunts me forever. There's actually two pretty notable foodie scenes in that movie that mm-hmm. I'd like to talk about. So obviously first one is Bruce and poor little Brucey. I feel like that's happened in real life.
Oh yeah.
Maybe not the principal doing it.
Well, we all have those stories of being made an example of. And that's obviously extreme version of
right.
it. I mean, that whole movie is just, you know, crazy tale of just between her parents and the school system. It's definitely it's commenting on, you know, a certain time. And but there's plenty, like you said, there's a couple other scenes.
Well, the other scene that I was thinking about was when Matilda snuck into Miss Trunchbull's house.
Yes.
And for some reason this sticks with me. I don't know why. I think I love chocolate.
I'm
a big chocolate fan. So when she was hiding, and she took a piece of chocolate from the candy box that Miss Trunchbull had.
Yeah.
And she hid with the chocolate or something like that. And Miss Trunchbull then comes in. She looks at the chocolate box. She opens it. And it's like this whole scene with the chocolate box.
Yeah.
And you hear like the crinkling of the wrapper coming off of the chocolate. And there's a scene where she just shoves the chocolate into her mouth.
Yeah.
And for some reason, that scene is stuck with me because, you know, Ferrero Rocher?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So it reminded me of those. And I love those.
Yeah.
And the crinkling of the wrapper coming off the chocolate and shoving it into your mouth and enjoying the taste. You see Miss Trunchbull doing that. And you're like, she's so gross, but this is so, like intricate. I loved it. It was, like, so intricate. And I loved the scene. But, yeah, Matilda is definitely one of my all-time favorites.
Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of 90 kids can relate and agree with me. Yeah, and then going into Dustin checks in.
Yeah,
Dunstan. The monkey,
the orangutan.
Yeah.
The Pongo Pygmaeus or whatever they...
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh,
that's
my God.
That's like one of the things I always... Because, you know, Ruben... Pee Wee Herman.
Put
that way. He's in it. He's looking for the Pongo Pygmaeus.
Oh, my God. That's
but that
so
movie,
good.
This is a ridiculous movie. And I don't know, what food scene do you think...
So, it's such a hard film to relay off to the food scene.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's so many different scenes where Dunstan is, like, going into the kitchen of the hotel.
Yeah, exactly.
Making an absolute mess. And then at the end of the movie, and I don't know if I'm ruining this for everyone, if anyone hasn't seen it.
It's okay. There's been enough time to separate spoilers.
Yeah, so I mean, it was a movie that was made in 1995. I think everyone had enough time to see it. If you haven't, you need to check it out. But at the end of the movie, Dunstan sees, like, the big cake.
Yeah.
And the older woman that he was massaging a couple of scenes earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I guess, like... Dunstan was hanging on the chandelier and, like, kicks the woman into the cake.
Yeah, into the cake, yeah.
And the woman's, like, shoving the cake in her mouth, but also, like, throwing it off of her face.
It's
and
such
it's such an intense scene.
Like, a bright pink, like, decadent, huge-looking cake that she just falls back into.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's, like, the only food... I'm sure there's others.
There's always
that I can't
because,
think
yeah, like
of,
you said,
but...
it takes place. I've started to realize, like, there's certain movies that I'm like, oh, maybe I should talk about that on the podcast too, because hotel movies just always have so much food involvement because, I mean,
always.
Yeah, always.
Because it's a hotel.
Because it's a hotel.
Yeah. And it was, like, supposed to be a very, very fancy hotel.
Yeah.
Where the food was very decadent and the kitchen was. You know, the chefs in the kitchen were very strict. And then all of a sudden, a monkey's running around the kitchen and they're freaking out. Even though he's the cutest monkey ever. But yeah, that's definitely another one of my favorites from childhood and now.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, they would never make a movie like that now.
Yeah, there's
from the scenes that were in it. It's interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a couple. There's some weird scenes in it, just from, again, him roaming around and seeing what he sees. It's like, you know, like from almost like a voyeur.
He turns into a bowling ball.
Yeah.
With like bottles of champagne, yeah, probably, for a kids movie.
Yeah, probably PETA probably wouldn't allow it now.
No, definitely not. It's definitely, and like, I wish I met the monkey.
Yeah.
The orangutan.
The orangutan.
Yeah.
Not, he's an ape, okay? Let's get it right.
All
right,
fine. Sorry, Dunstan.
A damn dirty ape. No. But those are just two great, like, examples of, like, film. Like, we're talking about, like, snacks that we grew up with. Like, those are just such, like, 90s, like, kids movies.
Uh-huh.
And that kid from Dunstan Checks In, he's the same one. I mean, well, the girl from Matilda is this one from, like, Mrs. Doubtfire.
Mm-hmm.
So adorable. And then the kid from Dunstan Checks In, he's a little more annoying. He's the one from the Santa Claus.
Oh, and just in this
movie, he's just always like, it should become a drinking game. The way he goes, "Dad!" Like, and just always yelling for Jason Alexander.
Yeah. Like, oh, I love Jason Alexander.
Yeah. He plays a good, like, he's the manager.
I wish we were talking about Seinfeld right now. Yep. It's literally my favorite show on Earth.
Yeah?
Grew up watching. Met Jerry Seinfeld in person at one of his shows.
Did you try to take a selfie with him and he said no?
No, worse. I told him that he reminded me of... not reminded me. I wished that he was my uncle.
Oh, okay.
So I told him that.
That's not bad. That's nice.
He told me he thought it was weird. I said, well, I grew up with you on TV and my parents, like, used to play trivia about Seinfeld and they love you and my dad loves you and we all love you. And he was like, okay, this is getting weird. I'm about to go on stage. And I was like, all right, like... I knew you were going to be out here, so that's why I came to the bathroom, but you definitely remind me of, like, maybe, like, an uncle, or, like, maybe you should be my uncle, and I just tongue-twisted and tongue-tied because I was so starstruck by him.
Uh-huh.
So that was weird.
Yeah.
That was definitely weird. Then I met Jessica Seinfeld at her cookbook signing,
mm-hmm.
and I told her what had happened with her husband and I, and she was also like, that's pretty weird.
Yeah.
But nice to meet you. Have a good day. Enjoy my cookbook. So had a little run-in with the Seinfelds.
Yeah.
And,
some great food episodes of Seinfeld. The most infamous, obviously, Soup Nazi.
Oh, my God. The Soup Nazi. My parents will never let that go. They always talk about the Soup Nazi.
And then there's the rye.
Oh, my God. You're bringing up some good memories right now. I mean, this no soup for you. Like, that is literally the best. That is one of the best episodes, for sure. The bread when what is it, Kramer steals the bread from the old woman,
and
the old woman's like screaming at him, and then that whole thing happens, and then the beefaroni with the horse,
yeah,
that's a good one.
I was just gonna say, and I forget what was the horse's name. He goes, whoa, it's Charlie. No,
definitely not Charlie. It was something funkier, but I don't remember. But I remember the beefaroni, and that was bad.
That was
disgusting. Yeah. Who's your favorite character in Seinfeld?
Oh, God.
I know, it's tough.
I mean...
Don't say Newman.
No. I mean, I do. I love Kramer. I love a wild card.
Yeah.
He's a wild card.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, then, like... I guess because also he complains the least.
Yeah, that's true.
So, like... I love Seinfeld, but I just... I think I love Curb more.
I love Curb, and just because it
every
originates from Larry.
Yeah, well, and every Seinfeld episode, the situations they get into, I want someone to be like, "What the fuck is going on?" And you just can't get that because it was network television.
Yeah,
and like while it's hilarious, just like sometimes I'm like, that's not the reaction, like that, like
that's not reality.
That's not reality, or like what it deserves right now, because you just couldn't have it on, you know, NBC versus HBO when Larry gets into the situations. It's just like,
those are so good.
So good.
And who's the guy that lives in Larry's house? What's his name again?
Oh god.
He's like, Larry.
Yeah, Larry. Yeah. Oh god. In this past season, he's like, Larry, you lamping.
Remember the episode, going back to Curb, remember the episode where he's in his house in LA,
mm-hmm.
and that old woman who used to own the house comes in?
Oh, yeah.
Because the fern was dying.
The fern was dying.
And she kept it there, and she kept going back into the house, and he was like, all right, enough of this, get out of my house! And then goes to her house with whatever his name is, and threatens her, and they're like, we're gonna take your dog. And we're also going to take your plant.
And
she's like, you're not taking my dog or my plant. Get out of here. And like, Larry's scared of her. That's a good episode.
Yeah. It's, oh God, why am I forgetting that? I mean, the actor is J.B. Smoove. And why am I totally...
Oh, my
blanking?
God.
Leon.
Leon, of course.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Can't believe we forgot Leon.
He's so good. And I love Jeff Garland on it. And thinking of, Jeff like, a food episode of that, I love... It was, like, one of the... I think it was one of, like, the later ones. It's between... There's the... What, there's an Israeli restaurant?
Yes, I was just going to say that.
The chicken, and he's like, the chicken's so good. And he's just like, at the end of that episode, there's just like, you've got Jewish people, you've got the, I forget where they were from.
They were from, like, from they were like Palestinian.
They were Palestinian.
And they were like talking about hating Larry because he was Jewish.
Yeah.
And then in later episodes, he goes back to the restaurant, like the Palestinian restaurant, and he tries to order, and they freak out at him. And then in later episodes, the same guy shows up in a car, and he goes to interview all of those people that Larry's done something to.
Yeah.
And he ends up, like, raiding Larry, like we were talking about before.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, Larry actually is a good guy. And he, like, goes to all of, like, the
yeah, because he's got the... What was it? It was in the last season.
He goes
he's
to the mosque.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, so I found out that Larry David actually is a great man.
Yeah.
And then they kidnap Larry and bring him in.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, Larry, we decided that we like you and you're a good Jewish man. We will leave you alone now. We will not kill you.
What was it? Yeah, what was that called? The episode was called whatever it's called when you have a hit put out on you.
Yeah.
By Palestinians. But oh my God.
That was a great episode.
The 10th season's coming.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Unfortunately, Bob Einstein passed away. You know, oh God, why am I blinking on this? My memory is horrible these days.
Same.
Oh God, what's his character's name on the show? He always calls him by his last name.
Wait, the one with the raspy voice?
With the raspy voice,
He passed away in real life?
Yeah, Bob Einstein.
He did?
Yeah.
How?
Funkhauser,
obviously.
There we go. Why am I so like Leon Funkhauser?
I can't believe he passed away. How?
Yeah. Maybe it was cancer.
That's so sad. Yeah. I love Funkhauser.
Yeah.
R.I.P., dude.
Yeah.
Damn.
But, I don't want to, like, end that section on such a sad note, but we'll move on to the last segment, Gut Instincts. So I've got just a nice little speed round of questions, so whatever thought comes to you first. We've actually kind of covered a couple of these, but we'll just, maybe you'll give a specific answer. Favorite fast food?
Oof. Wendy's, for sure.
Yeah.
So,
Wendy's wins a lot on this. Wendy's, Taco Bell, those are...
Taco Bell's my second.
Yeah.
So Wendy is the chicken nuggets with the honey mustard.
Ooh.
All-time fave. You know, it's funny, I've never had the burger.
Never had a Wendy's burger?
No.
Wow.
And I'm never going to because I stick to what I know and
okay.
I stick to what I like.
Never going to have a Baconator?
Wait. Nope. Chili.
Okay.
With the potato. The
yeah.
baked potato with the chili
yeah,
and the sour cream and
potato,
the chives
yeah.
is incredible. I grew up on that shit.
Uh-huh.
Unbelievable. So Wendy's definitely is first.
And
if you... Oh, of course, Vanilla Frosty. What? Oh my God, who are we kidding?
Oh, Vanilla Frosty, not chocolate?
No, vanilla.
Oh.
Because the vanilla helps you cut down on everything else you just eat. Because the chili's a little hearty, the chicken nuggets are a little hearty, and then vanilla gives you like a nice little soft padding in your stomach for your next meal.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's my answer for number one.
Go-to alcoholic beverage.
Okay. A dry gin martini with blue cheese olives.
Wow. That's specific and I like it. What kind of gin? What's the idea?
Hendrix.
Gin? Hendrix.
For sure.
Tom Colicchio's favorite.
I've had like three of those this past weekend. I need to relax.
Tom Colicchio always needed to have a bottle of Hendrix in his dressing room.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Not surprising.
And like one time we had like, it was a review, like I forget what the special episode after there was the winner and just like a check-in or whatever, and so it was just the one day we were like filming and they like got him a bottle of Hendrix for his dressing room and he didn't even open it, so at the end of the day I'm like, yoink.
I'll take that from you, thank you very much.
Well, favorite childhood snack?
Oh my God, I mean, Twix bar isn't really a snack, so I can't say that. Gonna say
pizza bagel?
No, I'm going to say Gushers.
Gushers!
I lived on Gushers just as much as I lived on all of those other things.
What a crazy concept.
I know.
And what a, like, unappealing
sounding
name.
Oh my God, the Scooby-Doo snacks, too.
Oh,
of
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, just all the gummy candies were just, like,
yeah, and
snacks,
now you look at what's in them from like all the knowledge we have of high fructose corn syrup, and I'm like, I can't believe I ate those every day. Thanks for packing those in my lunch, Mom.
Nonetheless, and yeah. The mystery flavor ones.
Ooh, the blue.
Yeah. Mm. Weren't they white though?
You're right. But I did like the blue.
Yeah.
That was Scooby.
Sweet or savory?
A mix of both, but if I had to choose one, savory.
Yeah. Favorite food city, domestic and international. And you can't go with New York. That's too easy of an answer.
Tel Aviv.
Okay.
Oof. And New Orleans.
That's my...
Really? Is that yours?
Yeah. That's my end-all, be-all favorite food city.
Same.
Wow.
Yeah. New Orleans is the shit. I hope it doesn't go underwater. That's scary.
Yeah, it is scary.
Because it's one of the best cities, I think, in the world.
It's my... If I didn't have... I would... Well, there's two things that are keeping me from moving down there. All my family's up here, and I'm just, like, got such a guilty conscience of moving away from them.
Oh, me too.
And if I should have done it, I should have done it before my niece was born, just because now I'm just like, well, now I can't move.
Yeah, you can't move.
And then just the summers down there, just a little too
hot.
I mean, we grew up in Jersey, and it's humid, but, you know.
It's worse just, down there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Have you been to Charleston?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going for the first time next weekend to visit a friend from high school.
Cool.
And I feel like the food scene down there might match New Orleans. What do you think about that?
Well, it's a different vibe. I mean, it's a great food city. It's just it's a different vibe, obviously.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a bit more, I don't want to say the word sophisticated. That's not right to say.
Well, there's parts of New Orleans that are more sophisticated than others, and you can get, like, a trashy meal that's still amazing and a sophisticated meal in New Orleans that's also
amazing.
I think
New Orleans, you have a better chance of having a great meal walking into any place.
Yeah, and in Charleston, you really have to, like, do your research before.
Yeah, it's a city, that you're better off, like, looking into, like, where you're going to go.
Yeah.
Like that.
Okay. Cool.
But still, I mean, it's a fantastic food city.
Okay.
Favorite cuisine?
Oof. I mean, oh my god, this is so hard. I'm a big fan of Japanese food just because, like, sushi is my number one. But you can't go wrong with Italian and Israeli.
Yeah.
Those three are my faves.
Okay.
Yeah.
Guilty pleasure food.
Chicken parm with spaghetti pomodoro. And if you give me, like, three pieces of chicken parm that's huge and three bowls of spaghetti pomodoro, I'll finish the whole thing.
Favorite condiment?
Oh, my God. Mustard.
Mustard. Yellow,
weird,
brown,
right?
Spicy. What
Dijon,
are we talking?
Spicy. All, actually.
Yeah, all.
The seeded one from Trader Joe's is my favorite.
I put that
on my salmon.
Oh, see, I love a good seeded brown mustard. For, like, a pastrami sandwich.
That's ooh,
like,
and a pastrami sandwich. Yeah. And a hot dog. And a knish.
Oh, knish.
Oh, a knish with mustard to die for. And a pickle on the side. Can't go wrong.
Oh, it's the best. We have very similar tastes.
Yes.
It's kind of right in front of me, but what's the last thing you ate?
Ugh, unfortunately, this, like, weird little yogurt thing that I didn't like too much. Breakfast is tough, man.
It is tough. I'm not a bit... I mean, I love breakfast food... But I wake up, you know, quick little routine and out the door.
I know. Coffee is really the breakfast, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I mean, look, if I want a breakfast sandwich, I can't do breakfast sandwiches every day. I wish I could.
Because
I love them so much. But that's really a hearty breakfast. Also, you want to get your carbs in the morning.
Yeah.
So you can burn them off during the day. And I have that thought in my head, but I also don't want the bread.
Yeah.
Again, trying to be healthy. as much as possible, but had this yogurt, and then I do, you know, maybe like a Kind bar, which aren't the best for you, but, you know, gives you some energy, and then really, like, lunch and dinner are my favorite. Lunch, I eat a
lunch
big
is my
salad,
favorite meal.
But I have to say, when you have a big lunch, you're exhausted for the rest of the day.
Yeah, that's why we need to adopt, like, the Spanish, like,
culture.
You have, like, your tapas. Siestas. True. A post-lunch siesta.
What time do you eat dinner around? Just curious.
Me?
Yeah.
It always changes. I'm definitely closer to like 8, 9 p.m.
See, like, that's not good.
No, it's not.
It's really bad. And, like, I'm trying to break
the habit of
doing
that. Well,
I stay
up until, like, 1 in the morning.
Okay. So then that...
Usually.
That works.
So there's at least a 4-hour buffer after that. And especially now with, like, nicer weather. Well, it's been, like, hot and humid, but in the summer, like when nicer weather happens, and then especially when it's hot and humid, I go for a bike ride at night. So I try to.
That's like, lovely.
Yeah, I try to do that because like I just go. I have a very like specific like pattern that I go. I go to like Liberty State Park in Jersey City,
love that.
I just do like a big circle because also since I do want to get better at. I mean, I just I've no. Everything's so random hours-wise with me because I'm freelance and it's just whenever I get a gig and that kind of stuff. So I do tend to stay up late, but then, you know, so there are some times that I can't fall asleep and I've got a gig. I have to be up, you know, and at a location at 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. or something like that, even earlier sometimes. But so I've also been doing the bike ride because then it helps me if I'm eating later. That's a bonus for that because then I'm doing some exercise after eating, and then also it helps me fall asleep easier because I tire myself out.
Right, that makes sense. Yeah. I think when I eat a late dinner, I can't fall asleep, or I do fall asleep, but I can't.
But it's not like
sleep
a comfortable
well.
Sleep. Yeah,
yeah because you just have so much in your stomach. My family friend made unbelievable burgers yesterday, like bacon, cheddar cheese, and like American cheese mixed into the burger. Fat burger.
Ooh.
And he made hot dogs and he made chicken burgers and he also made these amazing sauteed veggies that he baked after with Italian dressing. Yeah. It was so good. So I had like, okay, this is disgusting, but I had two burgers. People would think I'm like a horse from the way that I eat, but like I have to work. I work out like crazy. I'm running at the gym. I am cycling at the gym. I'm lifting. I'm doing my abs, so I'm allowed, I feel like I'm allowed to eat like this. I had like a hot dog, two burgers, three sides of veggies, a piece of corn, and then like five cookies for dessert. It's really disgusting, but hey.
That's a good meal.
You gotta eat.
Yeah. One of my favorite, just saying like stuffing it with the cheese. One of my
so
favorite
good.
Burgers still is in Westwood, New Jersey. There's this place called the Iron Horse.
Oh, I know the Iron Horse.
Yeah. I feel like a lot, if you're from North Jersey, like everyone's kind of heard of it or at least or been
to
there,
it. Yeah.
And it was just a place like, you know, you sit down and they just bring you like coleslaw and like some pickles right away.
So good.
And then they just the burgers there. My mouth is watering.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's just like they stuff it with cheese and that's, you know, and they have this one burger, I forget how many ounces it is, but it's called the Bedrock Burger after like the Flintstones.
That's
it's
funny.
Huge.
Huge burger. What's your favorite burger in Manhattan or in the city?
God.
City meaning Brooklyn, Manhattan.
Yeah, exactly. My favorite burger. Let me think about that and I'll answer at the end.
Okay.
Because do I have...
There's a lot of burger spots. I'll tell you mine.
Okay.
Bar Sardine.
Bar Sardine is so good in the West Village.
It's actually really under... I think it's a little underrated.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people.
I've got every, like, if you see, like, my Google Maps, it's all, like
it's listed.
Like, marks.
Oh, that's so funny. I should do that.
I literally, like, well, and then you can even see, like, how, like everywhere I go, I just mark.
Oh, wow, that's
and that's all,
so dope.
And that's just all restaurants.
That's a good
idea. And that's a great way, because then I, like, know, like, when people, like, asking to save.
Yeah.
So, let's see, my favorite... Yeah, Bar Sardines right there.
Yeah.
Beatrice Inn.
Really?
Yeah, that's...
I haven't had it.
Yeah.
I should go.
Angie Marr.
Burger Tour.
Yeah, that's Burger Tour, that would be...
What's your favorite pizza in the city? Now I'm interviewing you.
Yeah, exactly. I'm supposed to interview... I gotta help myself out. I do love Joe's Pizzeria. Right?
Love Joe's, classic.
Yeah.
Prince Street, classic.
Ruby Rosa. That's my...
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
With, like, the pesto swirl on the top.
I did everything there. Even, like, talk about then you go there and you have, like, the... Like,
meatballs.
Meatballs, but even the grilled octopus is, like, some of the best. Yeah, Ruby Rosa was probably my favorite.
Ruby Rosa's a good spot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have a favorite... I mean, maybe... Like, or no, what's the one? Oh, God, I'm just so bad with names.
The Cali?
No, it's right on, it's right on McDougal. It's right on the corner. Ben's Pizzeria.
Ben's, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good spot.
It's a classic.
What's that other classic that's on, like, around Greenwich Village that everyone goes to? It's by that restaurant, that small restaurant, Fish. Everyone goes there. It's very, very famous. But I went there, and I didn't think it was all that.
Okay.
But it's a classic, and the line is forever. I forget what it's called, but it has a red awning. It's by, like, Murray's Cheese, and...
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that's, isn't that... Well, Joe's is right there, but then... No, but this one... What, John's of Bleecker Street, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was okay. I think there's better out there. Prince Street Pizza with the pepperoni on top is by far my favorite, hands down. And I can eat, like, I can house at least 4 slices. It's pretty, it's pretty savage.
Yeah. Do you like artichoke?
No.
No?
I mean, drunk, yes. ask me sober, no.
No.
But drunk, for sure. Yeah. I like a lot of
things. I had a slice of it recently, and I just felt like, not because of, like, the quality or anything like that, I just felt nauseous afterwards. It was, like, too...
It's too creamy. I do love a nice artichoke slice. I just recently got into artichokes and mushrooms, so I'm into those now, but artichoke is just, it's so touristy.
Yeah.
I can't do it. And Prince Street Pizza now, I was walking on Prince the other day, and the line was insane. Yeah. I mean, you can like, homeless people's dream is Prince Street Pizza sitting outside, because you're going to make a lot of money out there.
You got a really good pizzeria right near around here. You got Lucali.
Yeah, we have Lucali. We also, it's not in Dumbo, but it's close enough.
Yeah.
And you have to get on that line at like 6. No. It's in, isn't it in Williamsburg?
Lucali? Forget.
Let me see.
No, I think, is it technically, or no, what neighborhood is that?
It's on Henry Street. Oh, you're right. It's actually closer than I thought.
Brooklyn Heights.
Yeah,
right?
It's in Brooklyn Heights. Yeah. You have to get there at like...
Carroll Garden.
You have to get there at like 5:30.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're screwed and you won't be able to eat.
What are those other... Those big ones out there. There's DeFara, obviously.
DeFara, yeah.
There's,
that's a good one.
What's the other ones? This is what I use my phone for. This is what... there's that one all the way out by Coney Island.
In Dumbo, you have the top two, which is Juliana's, which is also in Time Out Market. And you have Grimaldi's right next door.
Yeah,
Grimaldi's. And we're getting L&B.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They just... Someone just wrote about an article about them coming to Dumbo, so that's going to be crazy. That might take away some business from Time Out Market.
What would be your last meal?
On Earth. Like, if I were to die tomorrow, what would be your last meal?
Yeah, you know your time's coming, and you're just...
So sad.
I know, it is sad, but try and make the best of it, so what would you eat?
It would probably... I would probably, like, have to go to Japan.
Okay.
And have...
It's like the fresh is the fresh.
And,
some awesome sashimi and...
And then be on my way.
Yeah. Do you prefer... This is, I mean, it's, I feel like, a pretty obvious answer, but dine in or dine out?
Ooh, depends on the day. I mean, I like dining in, like, Monday through Wednesday, because it's healthier and I know what ingredients are going into my food, and... I feel way more relaxed when I'm cooking and eating and then cleaning and then sleeping. But when I go out, it's so special every time. And I love trying all new restaurants every single week. So, you know, mix of both.
Okay.
Yeah.
What would be your spirit food?
My spirit food? Yeah. Like my spirit animal?
Spirit animal, the spirit food. Yeah. What food best embodies your personality?
Yeah. I'd have to say... that's a tough one. Malawak is, it's Israeli.
Okay, I was like...
It's incredible. It's like fried dough with hard-boiled egg, za'atar, like all different spices, fried onion, and it's wrapped up. And it's absolutely incredible, and I used to eat it. It's so bad for you, but I used to eat it when I was living in Jerusalem, like, at least twice a week.
Yeah.
The combination of flavors in the fried dough, and it's so crispy, and that embodies me for sure. That is, and everyone needs to try Malawak, and you can also get it at Miss Ada. Oh. Miss Ada has Malawak, and anytime I go there and I see people eating it that don't know what it is, they're eating it like a pizza. They're cutting it up, and they're not full. You're supposed to fold it and wrap it and take a bite out of it. And people just, like, cut it like pizza, and it bothers me so much. But, yeah, gotta try it.
You go to the movies. What kind of... Are you having a snack? What's the...
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, of course. So, popcorn with, what's it called? Crunch a Bunch.
Crunch a bunch.
Bunch of crunch.
Bunch of crunch.
Yeah, I throw that in, mix it up.
Oh, you're putting it in there. Yeah.
And I finish the whole thing.
It doesn't melt too much, you know, like.
Unfortunately, it doesn't melt enough.
Oh. Okay.
And like, I don't really care about my fingers like being disgusting. It's just so good.
But
so.
You're in the dark, so it doesn't matter. Like all.
Yeah, I mean, one time I actually did ask for wipes at the counter, and they looked at me like, "This is not a restaurant. You're not at, like, you're not eating lobster tonight. Yeah. So you're eating Bunch of Crunch with popcorn. You don't need wipes."
Last question: what's the greatest lesson you've learned in food?
Always be patient.
Mm-hmm.
And always be very specific about exactly what it is you want.
Okay.
Yeah. That's probably the two biggest lessons.
Those are good lessons.
Yeah.
Jenna, thank you so much for, I mean, this all, I don't even think I like let in by saying this. I mean, well, we talked about it that we, you know, met right before me interviewing Joao, and I think we talked for like a half hour,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, boy, we should have recorded that. And so then we made it happen.
Yeah. And it just, the conversations just flow and come so naturally because we both love similar things.
I think we found it. Then we have, I mean, we both love New Orleans.
Yeah. Both love movies.
Yeah.
Both love Seinfeld.
Yes.
Both love Larry David. And of course, both love food.
At throwing parties, events.
Throwing parties and events.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for hosting me on your podcast.
Yeah, please,
I'm
right
excited
now,
to keep in touch.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, please tell people right now where they can find you, like on or on Instagram, or what if you want people to follow anything.
Oh, yeah, please.
To give you all the likes.
Yeah, know, give me all the followers,
rate,
all the likes.
Rate you.
Turn me into that influencer. Just kidding, but not really. You can follow me at J-Rose Toes. People call me J-Ro or Toes, two nicknames combined.
Okay.
So J-R-O-S-T-O-E-S.
Mm-hmm.
I also have a website, JennaConnects.com. If you or friends or anyone need any brand marketing consulting, hit me up.
Yeah.
You know where to find me. My email's on there. And yeah, looking forward to hearing from y'all.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, we have a little sign-off for every episode, and that's this line, "There's more to cut." It's something my grandmother always used to say, and I think it just transcends past food, that there's just more to cut from life. So if you wouldn't mind reminding the foodie fans that there's more to cut.
There's more to cut.
There we go. Perfect.
Yummy, yummy, yummy. I got love in my tummy, and I feel like I'm loving you. Love you, such a sweet thing, good enough to eat thing, and it's just a while.